get started, we're very pleased to have Paloma Tencio-Linares here today, who is former organizer of the London Aesthetics Forum. Who's now at the University of Kent. She did her PhD here in London at UCL and works on a range of topics in aesthetics, but mainly focused on photography and issues surrounding representation. Mm-hmm. Paloma, thank you. Experiencing photography between perception and memory.
Thank you. It is really a great honor to speak here at the London Aesthetics Forum, an institution that I hold dear in my heart for obvious reasons. It feels like being at home. I organized the London Aesthetics Forum for a few years, so it feels like being with family. But on the other hand, it's kind of scary to be on the other side of the room. For quite a long time, I heard so many good people speaking here, so I feel that I have to live up to the expectations. So let's see, if I don't disappoint. this is a paper, well, this was a chapter, originally a chapter from my dissertation that I'm turning into a paper. So I welcome all the comments that you can give me, that they are gonna be very useful. So let's start. It's frequently mentioned in the philosophical literature that photographs are a special kind of picture. Philosophers claim, on the one hand, that photographs are epistemically special. We can learn all sorts of things by looking at paintings, drawings, or etchings, but in a way, photographs are a more reliable source of information about the world. For example, photographs can function or are accepted as evidence in courtrooms. They are frequently used in passport. And also, they work better than paintings and drawings or etchings photographs work better than paintings and etchings in blackmail plots. But this epistemic advantage is accompanied by a special phenomenology. Philosophers frequently mention that our experience of photographic images seems to put us in a closer or more intimate cognitive contact with the depicted objects. And this is probably why photographs are frequently used in pornography, where the contact with the depicted objects has to be somehow more intimate, or why we tend to prefer to look at photographs of loved ones when we are away than to look at paintings or drawings. Now today I want to focus on this phenomenological aspect of photography. And in particular, I want to give an account of what is this special phenomenology, what this special phenomenology amounts to. So the plan for today is the following. So I'm going to start by trying to clarify what do we mean when we say that photographs are phenomenologically special. What is this thing that we are trying to account for? I'm going to give three conditions or three criteria that I think a good theory or a good account of the phenomenology of photography has to meet. I'm going to claim that this phenomenology that we're trying to account for is ultimately a purely sensory phenomenology. Photographs, I want to claim, are a perceptually recognizable category. Then I'm going to go through very quickly three of the most influential theories that try to account for this special phenomenology. I'm going to talk about briefly talk about Walton's transparency thesis, Curry and Peterson's trace theory, and Hopkins's factive pictorial experience. Then I'm going to say that only the first one, only Walton's theory meets the three criteria that I mentioned here before. But I'm going to claim that it does so at a very high theoretical cost. So I'm going to then propose my own view, which I call the documental images view, according to which a photographic pictorial experience preserves not only the visual similarity of the objects they are of, but also the particular character of the original scenes. So basically my claim is that it's a property of particularity that accounts for this special phenomenology of photography. So let's start from the beginning. What do we mean by special phenomenology? This might be obvious if you want. People have been talking about the special phenomenology of photography for a while, but I think that we need to clarify this because I feel that part of the confusion of the accounts is that we haven't clarified exactly what we want to get. So what do we mean by special phenomenology? What do we mean first by phenomenology? Well, first, we want to say that there is a peculiar aspect of photographs that is typically available to us when we experience photographs. There is something it is like to experience a photographic image. But what kind of experience or what kind of phenomenology are we talking about here? Notice that there can be a variety of phenomenologies associated to perceiving a photographic image. For example, there can be we can be talking about the phenomenology associated to certain cognitive states, such as emotions that we may feel when we experience a photograph, or maybe we are talking about the phenomenology associated to other non-sensory states, such as beliefs that we may get when we see a photograph. But also, or alternatively, we can be talking about a pure sensory or visual phenomenology, the kind of what is likeness or the kind of experience of phenomenology that is available to us merely by looking at the photograph. I think that when we talk about the special phenomenology of photography, people want to get at this sensory visual phenomenology, or at least this is what I am going to try to account for. So this visual sensory phenomenology is what is given to us in experience when we look at the photograph, independently of other emotions, thoughts, and beliefs. So of course you can get other sorts of phenomenology deriving from the emotions or the thoughts or the beliefs that you get when you look at the images. But I think that there is a specific sensory visual phenomenology, and that's what I'm going to try to account for. But why do we say that this phenomenology is special? Well, I think that this phenomenology, it's special because this phenomenology is something that is distinctive or characteristic of photographic images and not of other types of visual images. Photographs, I claim, are a perceptually recognizable category. So what do I mean by this? Well, it's very simple. I think that one can typically tell that one is looking at a photograph merely by looking, by experiencing it, by visually experiencing it. There is something it is like to visually experience a photograph that is distinct or different from what it's like to experience other kinds of pictures. Now, and this is important, that doesn't mean that what it is like, what it is to be a photograph or the nature of photography is exhausted or determined merely by perceptual features or by its distinctive look. Okay, this is important. I'm not saying that. Being a photograph, in this sense, is not an observational notion, such as being squared or being blue, whereby something cannot be squared and be blue, and visibly so, and have a visually indistinguishable doppelganger that is not also blue and squared. Okay, no, that's not the case with photographs. Photographs do have a visual indistinguishable doppelgangers, for example, photorealistic paintings. Well, pictures that can look exactly like a photograph but not be photographs. So all of non-photographic pictures can also give rise to a similar phenomenology. Let me drink some water because my voice is going wrong. But even though other pictures can give rise to similar phenomenology, it is still distinctive or characteristic of photographs to have this phenomenology and not of other pictorial kinds. So basically the idea is that if I give you a bunch of pictures, some of which are photographs and some of which are paintings, standard paintings and standard photographs, you will be able to distinguish which are photographs and which are paintings merely by looking at them. That doesn't mean that there are not paintings that cannot look like photographs, and that doesn't mean that what it is to be a photograph is determined merely by looking at it. Okay, so that's the idea. So an account of the special phenomenology of photography, I think, should meet these three conditions. It should tell us what is this distinctive property of photographs that is not typically present in other types of images, that makes sense of this experience of closeness or intimacy that we get when we look at photographs, and that is typically recognizable merely visually experienced photographic images. Okay, so in other words, the three criteria that I think a good account of the phenomenology of photography has to meet are these: the criterion of distinctiveness, closeness, and pure visual recognizability. Okay, so let's see whether the most influential theories on the market meet these three criteria. Let's start by the most influential one, Walton's transparency thesis. According to Walton, the property that accounts that is special or distinctive of photographic experiences is the property of transparency. So the capacity of photographs to ground literal cases or to ground perceptual experiences of the object they are of. So according to Walton, to see a photograph of an object is literally to see the object itself. So if I see a picture of my great-grandfather, according to Walton, I am literally experiencing or perceiving my great-grandfather. Of course, it doesn't mean that looking at photographs is exactly like seeing face-to-face. He says that the case of photography is a case of indirect seeing, such as that is similar to seeing through prosthetic devices such as mirrors, binoculars, or telescopes. But indirect seeing for him is a genuine type of visual perception. Okay, seeing an object through a photograph is a genuine perceptual experience of the object. And the way he justifies this is by saying that photographs instantiate the conditions necessary for seeing. And this is a long story, but basically he, to justify this, he endorses a causal theory of perception. So very briefly, he says that photographs like perception, like normal cases of perception, preserves a relation of real visual similarity with respect to the scenes or objects they are of, in virtue of being in a causal and counterfactual dependence with those scenes and objects, which is in turn, in a similar way as perception, independent of beliefs and intentions of agents. Okay, this is more or less the view, which I suppose that some of you are aware of, but anyway. So let's see if this theory meets the three criteria I mentioned before. Distinctiveness. Well, let's grant that Walton is right and transparency is only a property of photographs and not of other types of paintings. In this way, then the first criterion is met. Okay, people have contended this claim, but I think that the problem people had. So, for example, Dominic Lopez have claimed that some paintings can also be transparent. This wouldn't be a problem for the theory, since it's still the case that that photographs typically are transparent and paintings are not. So, the first criterion is met. Closeness. Well, presumably the second criterion is also met, because all genuine perceptual experiences put us in a close or intimate cognitive contact with the objects that we see. So since photographs are a case of perceptual experience, the theory explains why, photographs, in as much as they are a particular case of perceptual experience, they also afford the same close or intimate cognitive relation with objects. So again, the second criterion is met. Now, you can claim that perhaps the third criterion is not so clear, is not so clearly met by this theory. After all, if looking an object through a photograph were a literal case of a perceptual experience, we could expect that we could recognize the experience that we're having to be very similar to experience that we have when we see objects face to face. But this doesn't seem to be the case, right? We don't recognize the experience of photographs as relevantly similar to other experiences where when we genuinely see objects. Seeing an object face to face is clearly not visually recognizably similar to seeing an object through a photograph. But I don't think that this objection is conclusive. After all, seeing an object through a microscope or seeing an object through a telescope is also recognizably different from seeing an object face to face. And yet we're willing to say that, you know, seeing an object through a telescope is a genuine case of visual perception. So I don't think that's conclusive. I think that we can grant Walton that maybe it's the case that seeing an object through a photograph is a sui generis case of visual perception. So it's, you know, that's it. So the third criterion, it's met as well. Now, the fact that the theory meets the three criteria doesn't mean that we have to endorse this theory, because, you know, in a way, it is still an open question whether or not we see objects through photographs, whether this is the case or not. And this is a very contentious claim. People have disagreed with Walton, and there are a lot of criticisms. The main one is that photographs fail to instantiate the some necessary conditions for seeing. There are a lot of criticisms, but this is one of them. So for example, Cohen and Meskin have claimed that photographic experiences fail to co-vary with respect to changes and movements in the egocentric location of the depicted object, unlike perceptual experiences. So they claim that as I move around the world with a photograph, the egocentric location of the depiction, the thing depicted, changes, but the photographic image does not. And this is not the case when we experience an object face to face. In a similar spirit, Benson and A has claimed that photographs, unlike perceptual experiences, do not support sensorimotor counterfactuals. What is necessary for seeing, Nene claims, is that there is at least one way for me to move, such that if I were to move this way, the view of the perceived object would change continuously as I move. And this doesn't happen with photographs. Walton and other people, like Dan, for example, have tried to respond to all these claims and in very imaginative ways. And it's still a contentious thing whether or not we literally perceive through photographs. But again, if Walton theory were the only way to account for the special phenomenology of photography, or if his theory would be the only one that explained this phenomenon, we should endorse it. But maybe we can find an alternative account with similar explanatory power, but that is in a way less contentious. So, you know, let's try to see whether there are alternatives with less theoretical costs. So, another view is the trace theory, supported by Greg Curry and Mikael Peterson, according to which the phenomenology of photography is explained by the fact that photographs are traces. And by traces, they mean things or images that preserve the visual properties of the objects in virtue of being in contact with the object they are of, or in virtue of being in a purely natural or causal and counterfactual relation, independent of intentions, with the objects they depict. Okay? So basically, they endorse the core the core of the theory, of Walton's theory, without saying that we literally perceive through photographs. They say that this alone, the fact that photographs are a trace, explains the intimate relation with objects that photographs provide. At least this is the case with Curry. Mikael Peterson also claims that not only photographs are traces, but we have to believe that they are traces and that they have a certain epistemic advantage. And this belief makes them phenomenologically special, or makes us perceive them as somehow special. Here's Mikael Peterson in his own words. He says, the notion of photographs as traces seems to explain the proximity associated with viewing photographs. For traces of the kind photographs belong to in general, seems to have the capacity to evoke closeness, as when a depressed cushion evokes proximity to one's beloved by virtue of being a trace of her. Okay, so this is the idea. So, does this view meet the three conditions I mentioned before? Well, let's grant that they are correct, and this special relation the photographs bear to objects, this natural causal and counterfactual dependence, is distinctive of photographs. Let's grant that this is the case. Again, this is a bit contentious, but let's not go into details about this. Let's grant that the theory meets the first condition. Now, closeness. So, in a way, the theory does explain one way at least, in which photographs make us feel close to objects. And this is and the way they explain the proximity we feel to objects through photographs is the kind of the same kind of closeness that we feel when we feel close to a person, when we see an object that has been touched by this person. This is the example that Mikael Peterson gives of the romantically charged cushion. He says, a depressed cushion may be ever so romantically charged when the person who has left that trace is one's loved one. And it is thus charged, I take it, due to the sense of proximity to one's beloved that the cushion and the state it is in provides. Okay? So this is the kind of closeness that they are that the theory explains. Now, with respect to the third criterion, I don't think that the experience of closeness that Curry and Peterson describe is the kind of closeness that we feel merely by looking at photographs. Okay, being a trace of an object is a fact about the history of about the causal history of the production of the photograph. But the causal history is not something that we can see, as we learn with Hume, for example. The causal history is not something perceivable. It's true that the effect of this causal relation with objects, namely the preservation of visual similarity, is something that we do visually see or visually recognize. But this is not the property that Curry and Peterson claim is distinctive of photographs. After all, handmade pictures can also preserve the visual similarity with objects or with their subject matter. But what is distinctive, according to this view, is that is the means by which photographs preserve this visual similarity. And again, this causal history is just an independent fact that we can access by non-sensory or non-experiential means, namely by backgrounds, by knowing how the photograph was produced. But not, this is not something that we visually experience in the photograph. Okay, so that's why I think the theory, it's not clear at least, how the theory meets the third criterion of pure visual recognizability. This theory doesn't explain the special phenomenology, provided that we are trying to account for the peculiar visual or sensory phenomenology. If they're trying to explain another kind of phenomenology, that's fine. But you know, there are reasons to think that they are trying to capture this. The feeling of closeness that the trace theory explains, and this is something that I already said, is a non-purely sensory phenomenology. Hopkins's factive pictorial experience, this is another theory, faces, I think, a similar problem. And let me just briefly mention the basics of the theory. Hopkins claims that the relevant property that accounts for the phenomenology of photography is the property of factivity. Okay, so he says that photographic pictorial experience is factive. So if what is seen in the picture is the P, then P is the case. So for example, if I see a picture of if I see in the picture that Churchill is fat, this is his example, then Churchill is fat or was fat. Okay. Of course, Hopkins is not oblivious to the fact that photographs sometimes mislead, But he says that when photographs don't show how things were or how things are, it's because there's something working properly in the process of production of the photograph. He has a very robust way to justify this idea of the proper functioning of photography. So I'm not going to go through details. Just you know, believe me that this is not so easy as it sounds. He has a robust way to justify this. But anyway, just to get things short, here's his way of explaining how activity accounts for the phenomenology of photography. He says, he suggests, that the source of this phenomenology is that viewers know that photography aims to produce pictures in which we see in which we see things as they really were. That is, that photographs aim at accurate seeing in. Given all this, when the audience takes themselves to be looking at a photograph and take that to be the product of a photographic system in which everything has worked as it should, they will take their pictorial experience to be accurate as a matter of necessity. That is the source, he says, of our sense that they place us in a relation to the photographic to the photographed event, which is especially intimate and direct. Okay, so this is his view. Further evidence that he provides for the fact that factivity is what explains this special phenomenology of photography is to say that, look, I mean, there are other experiential states such as perception and memory that are also factive, and they also convey this feeling of proximity similar to the one that we get by looking at photographs. So he takes that to be further evidence for his view. So, again, does this view meet the three criteria? Well, first, distinctiveness. Again, let's grant that Hopkins is right, and the fact that photographic experience is factive is just something distinctive of photography and not of other kinds of pictures. Let's grant that this is the case, okay? If that's so, the first criterion is met. So, closeness. Notice that the feeling of closeness that this theory explains derives, as the quote mentioned, from some background knowledge that we have about the process of production or the epistemic advantages of photography. Okay, so we need those beliefs associated with the mechanism of production in order to derive this feeling of closeness. Okay, so again. As in the case of Peterson and Curry's view, the theory does explain the criterion of closeness, but appealing to certain mechanism of having beliefs about the process of production of photography. But this, of course, has this involves a problem with the third criterion of visual recognizability, because the property of activity is not something that is visually recognizable in experience. Okay, the feeling of closeness that Hopkins accounts for is not, strictly speaking, a merely sensory phenomenology. Again, this is the same problem as Curry's or Peterson account had. So, since neither Hopkins's view nor Curry's and Peterson's view meet the third criterion, you can claim, well, maybe there's a problem with the third criterion. Maybe we can challenge this third criterion of pure visual visible recognizability. Maybe people want to claim that there is not such a thing as a pure visual experience that is distinctive of photographic images. Maybe the distinctive phenomenology of photography has its roots or has its effects at the level of beliefs, as Hopkins and Peterson seems to suggest. Holding certain, and their view would be that holding certain beliefs related to taking an image as a photograph is a precondition for undergoing the feeling of closeness. This is the idea that Peterson seems to be endorsing. And the relevant beliefs that we have are beliefs related to the way photographs are produced or and their epistemic status, okay? So why should we believe this could be so? Peterson, sorry. The reason why Peterson thinks that this is so comes from an observation famously put forward by Walton, who claimed that, you know, there are paintings that look exactly at, or that we cannot distinguish from photographs. And it seems that when we learn that these paintings, that these pictures that we took to be a photograph are actually paintings, our experience is transformed. We then come to feel less close to the objects when we learn that these what we took to be photographs are really paintings. So the idea is, according to Peterson, is that this shows, this change of experience shows that what matters for the proximity aspect of photography cannot solely be the amount of detail or generally how the picture looks. Rather, the phenomenology of photography seems to depend on what we believe about the image, about the images that we looked at. If this is granted, Peterson claims, it suggests that an explanation of the phenomenological proximity should focus on certain beliefs related to taking an image as a photograph. So basically, Peterson's argument is the following. Look, a painting may look exactly like a photograph. And if it's the case that believing that an image is not a photograph is sufficient to block the feeling of closeness, then believing that an image is a photograph with the beliefs associated to this should be necessary to experience the peculiar phenomenology that photographs afford. But this is clearly a fallacy. It seems that the argument is assuming, seems to be committing the fallacy of assuming, of denying the antecedent, or taking a sufficient condition as a necessary condition. Look, it might be the case, I think it's true that believing that an image is not a photograph might be sufficient to block the feeling of closeness. Now, this doesn't entail that that believing that an image is a photograph is a necessary condition to undergo this special feeling of proximity that we get when we see a photograph. It seems that it's perfectly compatible to say that one doesn't need to have certain beliefs about the process of production of photographs in order to, you know, get this feeling that we get when we look at photographs. Actually, it is reasonable to think that this, you know, that this feeling of closeness is typically imposed on us prior to forming any beliefs about the photographic image or how it is produced. It seems to me that when we look at a photograph, we cannot help but perceive the image as a photograph. Surely, it is likely that we come to form certain beliefs about how the photograph is produced, and for their emotions and other beliefs about the photographic image after we know that it's a photograph. But this is a consequence of experience rather than a requirement for it. Okay, so having beliefs about the process of production might be something that we can come up with once that we know that it's a photograph. But they are not necessary for us to undergo this special experience that we get when we visually experience photographs. Actually, I think we have positive reasons to believe that background beliefs about photography is not a requirement for the experience of closeness. I think that the reason is that this idea is counterintuitive. Look, for example, a person who doesn't know or loses her memory or forgets everything about the photographic process, I think, can easily tell the difference between this picture and that picture, or a standard photograph and a standard painting. Similarly with children, and again, this is ultimately an empirical matter, but I think it's reasonable to think that this would be the case. The children that are yet not familiar with the photographic process or have no beliefs whatsoever about the epistemic advantages of photography can also tell the difference or you know, distinguish between a standard case of a photograph and a standard case of a painting. So beliefs related to the process of production of photography or its epistemic status should, I mean, they may give rise to a further non-sensory or non-visual experience of closeness. I'm not denying this. Okay, you can get, once that you have these beliefs about how photographs are produced, you may get an extra feeling of closeness with the objects. And these beliefs may well contribute to intensify the feeling of closeness that we get by just visually perceiving the images. But there's nevertheless something intrinsic to the visual experience of photographs that we recognize merely by looking at them. And this is, I think, what we want to capture, or what I want to capture, when we're giving an account of the special phenomenology of photography. So, my view. I think that the relevant property that help us to give an account of what is special about this experience of visually perceiving images is a property of particularity. Photographic experiences, I claim, like ordinary perceptual experiences, are experiences with particular content. And in case that you are not familiar with this idea of particular content, I'm going to briefly mention something about this. Sorry about those people who are aware of this idea of particular content, but you know, I want to get us all on the same page. So the idea of particular content is basically related to the literature on singular thought and the philosophy of mind and language, and it's basically more or less this. And again, this is very basic. It gets more complicated than this, but more or less this is the picture. So we have two ways to think about objects or events. Okay, we can think about objects descriptively by having general thoughts about objects. Okay, if we have if we think about objects descriptively, we basically have thoughts mediated or formed by a description or a concept or set of general properties or universals, okay? So for example, if I hold the descriptive thought, I think about an organizer of the London Aesthetics Forum, this is a description, okay? And I can be thinking about Andrew, for example, since he satisfies the description of being an organizer of the London Aesthetics Forum, okay? But my thought can be, but other people, there are other organizers of the London Aesthetics Forum that can meet this description as well. This is a general description, okay? So I could be thinking about Stacy or Jack or Miguel because they all meet this description, okay? Now, I can also think about objects or events singularly or by holding singular thoughts in my head, okay? In this case, I would be thinking about a person or object more directly, okay? Singular thoughts or particular thoughts have the cognitive role of singling out particular objects in the absence of descriptions, okay? So I'm not thinking about a description, I'm thinking about a particular person. So that person, if I think about Andrew, I don't think in descriptive terms, I think about that person that I saw at the BSA conference last September, okay? In this case, my thought would go straight out to Andrew himself, okay? Andrew himself would figure in the content of my thought, okay? This is more or less the idea. That's why some people claim that singular thoughts are object-dependent, but this is contentious. But anyway, so this is more or less the difference between singular and descriptive thoughts. Now, there are two types of singular or particular thoughts, okay? thoughts associated with proper names, for example, and these thoughts are grounded in a persistent capacity to think about particular subjects more than one occasion. For example, if I think about Andrew today, this Andrew, I can think about Andrew by his name tomorrow, and it would be like it would be a persistent capacity to refer to the same object today and tomorrow. Okay. And people talk about this capacity in terms of certain notion networks or naming practices. Okay, but this I'm not going to go into details here because this is not what I'm going to be talking about. There is another way or another type of singular thought, demonstrative thoughts, that are grounded on a temporary cognitive capacity to pick out particular objects that are present in a particular moment at a particular time. Okay, and the paradigmatic case are perceptual experiences or thoughts that are linked in a way to perceptual encounters with objects. So perceptual experiences put us in direct, close cognitive contact with objects. So my perceptual experience, say, of this table, allows me or puts me in a position not only to hold the claim that there is some table or other that looks thus and so, but actually puts me in a position to say that this table that I'm looking at looks thus and so. Okay, so it's not only puts me in a position to hold a general claim, but actually a demonstrative singular claim. It is this particular table again, and that's why it's a singular demonstrative thought, it's this particular table that I have in mind, and not merely a qualitative profile that could be satisfied by various objects. Okay. So my view is that photographs ground experiences with particular content in this way, in the demonstrative sense. Okay. We not only have the experience of seeing, when we look at a photograph, we not only have the experience of seeing a given kind of object in general, or a set of properties, or a set of a qualitative profile that resembles some object. It's not a question of properties that resemble an object. It seems to us that when we experience a photograph, we are presented with concrete, particular, mind-independent objects. So, for example, when I look at a photograph of my nephew, Pablo, I don't have the experience of seeing a set of properties or a profile, a qualitative profile that can be met by Pablo or other kids that look the same. I have the experience of seeing a particular, concrete, mind-independent person who happens to be my nephew. Okay? And this is not only the case with familiar people or objects. If I open the newspaper and I see a photograph of someone that I don't, I haven't encountered before, I still have the experience of seeing a particular object. This man, I may not know who that man is, but I have the experience of seeing that man, whoever this person is. So again, my experience puts me in a position not only to claim that there is some man or other that looks X, Y, and Z, my visual experience of the photograph put me in a position to say that this man, whoever he is, looks X, Y, and Z. Okay. Compare here, for example, with the case of hand-drawn figures of a woman. Look, I mean, these three paintings may eventually represent a particular person. Imagine that Legea, for example, or Schiele wanted to represent a particular woman that they knew. That's fine, but the point is that merely by looking at the painting, you don't have an experience as of seeing a particular woman. They have to tell you that they represent a particular woman if that's the case, but you don't perceive that. Okay, you don't have the feeling of being experiencing a particular mind-independent, concrete woman. Okay, and this is not the case with photography. Photography typically gives you an experience with particular content. So I think that the feeling of cognitive proximity that derives from the fact that that we get from photography derives from the fact that photographs put us in a cognitive contact with particulars and not merely with a qualitative profile that can be instantiated by various objects. In this sense, I think photographs are like perceptual experiences. Now, this doesn't mean that photographs are full-fledged cases of perceptual experiences. This doesn't mean that I am endorsing Walton's view. Okay, I don't think that this is the case. First, I mentioned before a couple of objections by Cohen and Meskin and Vincent and A that seem to be suggesting that photographs are not literal cases of perceptual experiences. But here are other differences that I think photographic and between ordinary perceptual experiences and photographic experiences. So perceptual experiences are unrepeatable events of unrepeatable scenes. Okay, so if I see you now, you know, tomorrow you're not going to be here, so it's an unrepeatable event of an unrepeatable scene. And photographic experience, unlike perceptual experiences, are repeatable events of unrepeatable scenes. Okay, if I take a picture here and I see this is an unrepeatable scene, tomorrow I see the photograph, and the day after I see the photograph, and it's going to be exactly the same scene. So it's so they are repeatable events because tomorrow I will see the same image as the next day of an unrepeatable scene because this scene is going to be over, okay? So here's, I think, a big difference between perceptual experiences and photographic experiences. Also, of course, in perceptual experiences, objects are not and not only present to the mind, but also present in our environment, and this is not the case with photographic experiences, because objects are present to the mind, but they are absent normally from our environment, okay? So again, I'm not endorsing the transparency thesis here. Okay. Now, you may claim, sorry. Now, you may think that the particularity associated to perceptual experiences comes from the fact that perceptual experiences are linked to the immediate environment with the objects that you see, right? You may say, well, you know, perceptual experiences have particular content because the objects are there in their environment, but you don't have that in photography, and if that's the case, maybe it's not possible to have particular experiences in the absence of objects in your environment. So is this the case? Do the difference drawn between photographic perceptual experiences and perceptual experiences prevent photographic experiences from having particular content? I don't think so. And for example, take the case of memory experiences or episodic memories. Episodic memory experiences are a paradigmatic case of mental state with particular content, and yet, they are conceived of as retained acquaintance. They preserve the particularity of the original perceptual experience, and this is despite the fact that the scene is absent from the immediate environment. Okay, so again, in the case of photographic experiences, you have the object present to your mind, but absent in the immediate environment, and this is the case in episodic memories as well. Okay, so my view is that if there are cognitive phenomena or experiential states such as memory experiences different from perception that lack immediacy with objects in the environment and yet display particularity, why can we say that experiencing objects in photograph is also a cognitive experiential state with particular content but different from ordinary perceptual experiences? So again, we don't have to embrace the transparency theory to keep the intuition that photographic experiences have particular content. In fact, the case of photographic images is more similar in relevant respects to the cases of memory experiences. Again, here are the similarities. Both photographic experiences and memory experiences are repeatable events of unrepeatable scenes. In memories, like in photographs, the objects represented are only present to the mind, but absent from one immediate environment. Okay, so again, the things that made photographic experiences different from perceptual experiences, in a way, made them more similar to memory experiences. So my claim is that we can model photographic experience on episodic memory experiences. I want to claim that photographs support a sort of external memory experience. They support an experience that documents, or in a way, preserves the content of or part of the content of a perceptual-like event. Okay, photographic experiences not only preserve the qualitative aspect or the visual similarity with the objects they are of, but they also preserve the particular content of the perceptual-like event. In this sense, I think photographs are documental images. Now, does my view meet the three conditions that I mentioned at the beginning of the talk? Well, I think that it does meet the criterion of distinctiveness, because particularity is indeed something distinctive of photography that is and not of of other non-photographic images. Surely, some paintings support experiences of particulars, but it is by no means characteristic of paintings and drawings, while it is typically the case of photographic experiences. with regard to the second criterion, closeness. My claim is that we feel that we are in an intimate cognitive contact with objects because we recognize our experiences as of experiences of particular objects or mind-independent events. Even if the objects are absent from our surroundings, we have the experience of them being closely or in intimate cognitive contact with our minds, in a way. And finally, I think it meets the third criterion of pure visual recognizability, because particularity is indeed a property that we can recognize and experience. We visually recognize the objects that we see as particulars. This is something that when we look at a photograph, it's clearly the case that we are perceiving particulars. So we don't need to presuppose any beliefs about the process of production in order to undergo this particular experience. And this is it.
Thank you, Paloma, very much for the talk, and thank you also to the BSA, who very generously fund this series.